Chuck Chat Technorama for Monday, October 17th, 2005.
Any similarities between this podcast and actual events and or persons living or dead are purely coincidental. Names have been changed to protect the innocent, and no animals were harmed in making of this podcast.
This show is a proud member of the TechPodcast.com network.
Find out more about this and other shows at
www.techpodcast.com.
TechPodcast.com.
If it's tech, it's here.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Unilateral phase detractors. Cardinal gram meters. Six hydrocopic Margot vanes. Conductors and fluxes. Prefamulated annulite. Malleable logarithmic casing. Swerving bearings. Panometric fan. Milford trunnions. And the facient lunar wane shaft. Lotus O deltoid type. Semi-boloid slots of the stator. Drawn reciprocation dingle arm. Sinusoidal deplanaration. Retroencabulator.
Welcome to Technorama. This is show 49 and counting. That means the next one is the big 5-0 with all the prizes and good stuff. But we got a lot of good stuff in this show. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is my trusty co-host, Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm great, Chuckles. How you doing?
Chuckles.
You ever heard that one before?
Always nail me with a good one. And we have a special guest hiding out, lurking in the chat room, taking care of things as always, is Mark Shepard. How are you, Mark?
I'm great.
All
are
right.
You, Chuck?
You keep things under control there. We'll check on you in just a little bit, okay?
Okay.
Wonderful. Mark is our trusty. He's been promoted from Uber Geek to chat room administrator.
Well, stalker was in the middle as a transitional occupation.
We'll have to get an intern stalker.
Yeah, maybe.
Coming up in tonight's show, we've got information about Furl. Is that Furl or F-U-R-L?
I've been calling it Furl.
Okay, yeah, that's what it looks like it says. Story about a digital dentist. We talk with a gentleman I'm acquainted with from work who's doing some work for us. His name is honestly Frank Frank, and he talks to us about some of his homemade server cooling system that he's got. He also sent some pictures later on. We were talking. We'll get to that. But okay. He retrofitted a plotter inkjet system, which is kind of interesting. I wish I had some recording of that. And we've got, if we get time to get to this, we have more notes from a PM in the trenches. All that and more coming up right after these messages from our sponsor. If you organize conference calls or hold business meetings with remote clients, you can use GoToMeeting to keep everyone on the same page and make your meetings more effective. It's helped our members at TechPodcast.com stay organized, made planning much easier, and saved us time. Best of all, it's affordable for both small and large businesses. GoToMeeting has agreed to let TechPodcast.com listeners try their web conferencing tool free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/TechPodcast for your free trial now. Discover how GoToMeeting can revolutionize the way you hold business meetings. On this day in tech history for October 17, 2005. It's October 17th. This is the 290th day of the year, according to the Gregorian calendar. There are 75 days remaining in 2005. It was on this date in 1604, the German astronomer Johannes Kepler observes that an exceptionally bright star had suddenly appeared in the constellation of Ophiuchus. It was dubbed Kepler's star, but later turned out to be the last supernova to be observed in our own galaxy, the Milky Way. Thomas Edison files a patent for the optical phonograph on this date in 1888. That would be the first movie. In 1933, Albert Einstein, fleeing Nazi Germany, moves to the United States. The 1964-65 New York World's Fair closes on this date on 1965 after a two-year run. More than 51 million people had attended the two-year event. In 1989, the Loma Prieta earthquake, measuring 7.1 on the Richter scale, hits the San Francisco Bay Area. And in 2003, the Pinnacle was fitted on the roof of the Taipei 101, a 106-floor skyscraper in Taipei, allowing it to surpass the Petronas Twin Towers in Kuala Lumpur by 50 meters, or 165 feet for us backwards U.S. citizens, and become the world's tallest high-rise. Happy birthday goes out on this date in 1563 to Jodocus Hindus, the Flemish cartographer whose name I massacre so easily. Also, happy birthday to Hiro Kanemori, the Japanese seismologist born on this date in 1936. And finally, happy birthday to Dr. Mae Jemison, the U.S. astronaut born on this day in 1956. And that's the way it was on this day in tech history for October 17th, 2005.
Airing his thoughts online since 1985, you're listening to Chuck DeMasi.
And you're listening to Craig Stepp also.
Yeah.
Craig, we've got some listener feedback about the previous show about GPSs.
I hope nobody's going to chide me again.
No, actually, they didn't. Okay. Jorga, our super fan from Belgium,
Our Belgian correspondent?
Yeah, that's right. We have correspondence now. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
He commented that TomTom also has a pretty good GPS, and they are really big in Belgium. So I forwarded that on to Steve Pruitt, who is our resident GPS guru and correspondent. Now I'm going to use that word all over the place.
Yeah.
He writes back, when I stated that TomTom was one of the smaller players, I was, of course, being USA-centered. Not to sound arrogant, but the U.S. is one of the biggest markets for consumer GPS units, and TomTom doesn't really market here yet. I really like their units. They are very specialized. They even make a GPS just for motorcycle use.
Cool.
In the time allowed, I chose to hit on the big players in the U.S. market. There are a lot of good companies out there making some explicative fine units. But until I can...
Say it, man.
Until I get my paws on one of the U.S. maps... with one of the U.S. maps on it, I really can't comment on them. So, thank you very much, Steve, for keeping us in the loop on the GPSs, and thank you, Jorga. And if anyone out there has any comments on GPSs, actually, somebody did. We have listener voicemail this month. That's about how long it takes for some of these people to respond to our listener line, 206-222-CHAT.
Oh, by the way,
yeah.
I wanted to say that I've had several people comment to me that they liked Steve's spot last week.
Oh, good. We'll have to get him back. Yeah. He actually stayed after school and recorded a few segments that we're going to put on Freestyle. He recorded some stories. He used to be a trucker. Very funny stories. So hang on. We'll be back right after this.
Hi, this is Mark from Memphis.
Who's Mark from Memphis?
Howdy, this is Mark from Memphis.
I knew a Mark from New Jersey once.
Howdy, it's Mark in Memphis.
Oh, Mark from Memphis.
Hey, guys, this is Mark in Memphis. I've just been catching up on shows and hit the one where you talked about the video iPod. Basically, this is the iPod with video, or the iPod that also does video, is the way I think they kind of described it. But this is supposed to be the best internal software in an iPod they've had to actually play music. The something I've forgotten exactly how they put it, but they said something about that this one played music at better fidelity, or the best fidelity that they had so far. About putting video on a television, it will do it, but from what I understand, it's not the best yet. There's still some I think the guy described it as digital artifacts that show up when it goes to television as opposed to being on the screen. They said on the screen it was pretty good. Well, anyway, good show. Been kind of interesting. Or what I've listened to has been pretty interesting. And I'll stay subscribed. Y'all have a marvy day. Bye. Hey, guys. This is Mark in Memphis again. One thing, just to follow up, I'm running a HP iPack with a Belkin Bluetooth GPS. I caught it on sale for around $150, and it's been great. I just had a tough time is finding software to go with it. Belkin provided some, but they haven't been doing updates. I know another company actually produced the software, but I'm not sure who that is. I wonder if any of you guys know. I'm using some TomTom right now, but it works good a lot, but then every once in a while it's like it freaks out a little bit and the GPS says that I'm off, like 20 feet off the road when I'm really not, and a few things like that. So if you know who produces the software for the Belkin, I'd like to get an update of that software because they're not keeping up with it. Have a marvy day. This is Mark in Memphis. Bye.
The number you have reached has been changed to a non-published number.
Do you want to get those relatives that are always asking you for help with their PCs off your back so that you can get back to Technorama Podcast? Then send them to me at www.typicalpcuser.com, home of the Typical PC User Podcast. Typical PC User Podcast. Help for the rest of us.
Mark from Memphis comes to us with his own theme that we borrowed from the Dragon Page. I don't have official permission to use that yet, but getting
thanks,
back to
Dragon Page guys.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, whoops. Yeah, like Evil is one to talk about ethics on a podcast. We won't go into that, but if you listen to Winging It, you know exactly what I mean.
Yep. Hey, I wanted to tell Mark in Memphis that over at the axumsite.com, which is a site I go to a good bit for information about my Dell Axum, they talk about Pocket PC GPS software, and I'm trying to think of the name, but there's a couple of them that they've been throwing around. So search in the forums for GPS, Bluetooth, or something like that, and maybe you can find something that's that'll work for you.
And if you have any information on that Belkin Bluetooth thing that he was talking about, you can either steer it our way, Chuck at ChuckChat.com, or Craig, K-R-E-G, like Greg with a K, at ChuckChat.com will work even better.
Yep.
He knows more about these things than I do. Also, we were hoping to get a few more people in the chat room tonight. Sunday night is usually our better night than Wednesday. But, we'll throw this out there anyway for you, the listener, to have some fun at home. I'm going to start it on a really weird slant. This is supposed to be our quiz question, tech question we'll answer at the beginning of the show. And as the show progresses, people in the chat room, that's why we have Mark hiding out in there to throw us answers and go, hey, someone's got an answer. See if you can answer this throughout the show. Our first quiz question is, what were the first cookie cutters made from? Yeah.
Wood.
No, it's not wood.
Okay.
Or bone. Or... So work with me on that one, and see if you can guess that. We'll come up with the answer at the end. First cookie cutters, what were they made of? I'll give you a hint. It's two materials. Okay? You go with that. Well, we go on to a quick follow-up story. Oh, I got to mention that clip from Mark from Memphis, as I was putting those two calls together, he sent them. They came across the K7.net thing when you call 206-222-2428. I get a WAV file mailed to me, and it's in 8-bit format. I can't import that directly into GarageBand, which is where I do all of my editing.
GarageBand.
What happened was I used Audio Hijack Pro, played the WAV files in QuickTime, and saved them off to a 128-bit MP3. Worked great. Drag, drop, drag, drop, drag, drop. I had all the things lined up for the first call, and then I started dropping the second call in, and it was a copy of the first. It's like the buffer or some cache was just whacked out. I stopped GarageBand, I restarted GarageBand, dragged the file into GarageBand, it's the same clip. I cannot... And then I restarted the computer. I'm like, I emptied the trash. I restarted the computer. I still can't get this thing. I dropped the clip in. It's a copy of the other clip.
Hey, Chuck.
Yes?
Go download Audacity.
Hold on. I'm getting to the end of my story. It does have a happy ending.
Okay.
All I did was move the file and rename it. I put it on the desktop instead of buried down in the Audio Hijack Pro directory. Mm-hmm. Renamed it to Mark from Memphis number 2.mp3. Worked like a champ. There is something spooky. So if anybody out there in Apple land is listening, I think you got a bug somewhere, because I have seen this before on other clips, but I can usually get around it with a simple stop and restart. But this one was driving me nuts. Took me about 25 minutes to put that little 2-minute clip together.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
You can show me how to use Audacity at the expo, because I want a personal lesson. I'm the kind of person that you got to show hands on.
It's really easy, but yes, I will.
Okay, that'd be great. Looking forward to that. That's in, what, 3 weeks now?
Yeah, woo!
And we
gotta go.
I got a ton of work left to do before I'm ready for that.
Not me. I'll just let it sit till I get back.
No, I have work to do at the expo. This is not just a vacation. There is work to be done.
I'm an expert firefighter.
Woo! All right, I got a quick follow-up on the SharePoint discussion we were having before. Our corporate WSS, that's Windows SharePoint Services site, is up. They put that up. I had a little sandbox one set up just so I could play around with it before they got me an actual account. Got my website for my project, quickly set it up. I set up an issues list. I got the contacts in there and added an event or two, because we do have the orientation next week. I did have a problem with dragging things between Outlook 2003 and the SharePoint calendar, because, and this is a known, I don't know if you call it an issue or a feature, but you can't drag things onto the SharePoint calendar, but you can drag them from the SharePoint calendar onto yours. And I said, well, what's the point of that? You know, you want to, if I'm going to set up a meeting between 10 people, I'm going to go into Outlook, which uses our Exchange server, and schedule the meeting. But then I want to throw it on the web page real quick. Well, you can't.
Sure.
You can't put it from Exchange onto the SharePoint calendar. It only goes the other way. So that's kind of a bass-ackwards way of doing it.
Hey,
yeah.
I smell a script.
It's an access thing.
Maybe there's a way to hack it.
It's a permissions thing, actually.
No, I'll say maybe there's a way to hack it.
Oh, maybe. I'm very happy at how rapid the deployment was in getting this site set up. And corporate is probably going to customize the issue list to look and smell and feel more like the one we've got written in Lotus Notes, because we're getting rid of Lotus Notes. There's a lot of nice applications, but the issues list is going away. Corporate's probably going to outsource to get the customizations to work the way they want. I did see a couple things in the issues list that I didn't like. They hand you 3 or 4 standard fields, and you can't delete them. And you really can't customize them too much. So if you've got a category list, you're stuck with category. You can change the name, you can change the values, but you're going to have some kind of select list there. That was kind of stupid. And I also found that you can, in the issues list, when you're pulling a list of names, you can do a lookup, and you can look up from, say, all the users that are on a team, all the users that have accounts on the web server, or a list of your contacts. And I said, perfect, because I've got 10 people on this project, and I want that to be my pick list, because when I'm assigning issues, I want it to be limited to the 10 people on this project.
Sure.
Well, for some reason, it's not pulling the list of names from the contacts right. Even though I said, look up from contacts, I go to select an owner, and it says, there's nobody to select. So there's still a couple of quirks to work out on that issue list thing. But in general, I'm pretty happy with the SharePoint services stuff.
Cool.
Technology is a wonderful thing when it works, and when it doesn't, you get Chuck Chat.
Couple of quick news items. iTunes 6, as everybody is all aware of, is out because to support the video iPod, it's out. And I was told by Douglas E. Welch over at Career Opportunities, the High Tech Career Handbook, also a Friends in Tech member, he said, iTunes 6 fixed the 64 encoding issue that we found with 5 and 501, and I tested it on a couple of freestyle shows recently, and it is indeed fixed. That awful flanging noise is better, and it does encode faster than the iTunes lame encoder, which is a nice workaround if we have to use it, but we don't need it anymore with iTunes 6, so I'm really happy to see that's fixed.
Cool.
Also, Samsung was forced to pay $300 million due to price fixing of DRAM. recently. Cha-ching. They had kind of like this, the memory makers of DRAM had this cartel thing going on, and Samsung got their hand slapped to the tune of $300 million. Owie. But it says they're forced to pay. Who are they paying? It's not me. Are you getting any money out of this?
It's a government fine, I'm sure.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
The other cartel?
Probably. Yeah. Or $300 million over 10 years and $18 billion worth of RAM. Okay, that works out to like 0.02 cents per person. Here's your check.
Yeah.
So maybe we can start some kind of podcasting cartel and do some price fixing on all this free content we've got out there.
Yeah, right.
Craig, I'm going to have to slap your hands on that.
Hey, come on, man. They're laughing with you, not at you.
You may think it, but it's not always true. All right, we've got a geek survival tip from George Starcher coming up. Let's roll that, shall we?
This is Sergeant Starcher from In the Trenches podcast over at KevinDavid.com, and I'm here with your geek survival tip. So when your superior officer has caught you buying that latest toy against all orders, and you're put on restricted rations, here's what you can do in the morning to get through the rest of the day. Take your Chinese food from the night before, place it on a plate, take two paper towels, fold them over, and pre-moisten them. A quick run underneath the faucet should be good enough, soldier. Lay this pre-moistened towel over the Chinese food, place it in your microwave for a minute or two to heat it up, and it acts as a steamer. Oh, I love the smell of Chinese food in the morning. And that's your geek survival tip. Back to Chuck and Craig.
Did you know that you can build a website in minutes at GoDaddy.com? You can, with Website Tonight. Just pick a website template and add your own text and graphics. That's it. Each Website Tonight account includes secure hosting, a free email account, and much more. It's the complete solution to create your very own website. And as a special offer from Tech Podcast listeners, you can take an additional $5 off of any order of $30 or more. All you have to do is enter tech code TECH4, that's T-E-C-H and the number 4, when you check out.
All right, we are on to the main stories of the show. Craig, you've got a little something about Furl.
Yeah, you know, I've been using, I'm of course, you know, I'm a big fan of web-based apps such as blog lines and, you know, delicious bookmarks, stuff like that. Well, I started playing with Furl. Have you messed with Furl yet?
I have not. Is that anything like Wget or is it more web-based?
No, it's not an app. It's a web-based application, just like Delicious. It keeps all your bookmarks on. Mm-hmm. Instead of bookmarking them in your browser, you bookmark them and they stay on that site, so they're available wherever machine you're on. But one thing I like about Furl, it's easy to bookmark. You just drag the little bookmarklets they have to your bookmark toolbar.
Mm-hmm.
There's one, when you click on it, it prompts you for a bunch of details, which you can fill out and it'll save it.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one that prompts you for less details, or one, you just click it, it takes and goes away, and then you go organize them later. But here's the really cool thing I liked about Furl. I go in there, and when you log in and look at your bookmarks, you'll see a list of them there, but there's a little, looks like a little floppy disk, and it's a little misleading icon, but when you click on it, it shows you the page as it was when you bookmarked it. It's like a cached version on their site. It's
interesting.
So, yeah, it's great, because what happens is, what if it's a dead link now? Well, you still have a picture of it. So
right.
You can read the data. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. So I started playing with that. I like it a lot. Had a little trouble the other day. It wasn't keeping a couple of my bookmarks. So I'm going to check into that. Could have been my fault. But it's all readable through RSS feeds. You can share your links with some of your friends. And like I said, they can subscribe to them using RSS. And your bookmarks will just show up in their feed readers, so it's kind of nice.
Neat. Now, I can particularly see a practical application of the cached bookmark page thing if you're using a reference page and they change it and you go, wait a minute, I'm still using the old software and now I can't find the reference to it. That happens all the time.
Now, it just caches that one page. All the links are still, you know, point to the real places. Right. And, you know, so, but other than that, it's pretty nice.
Craig, have you been to the dentist lately?
Yes, I go every 6 months.
Is it time for your 6 months?
No, I just went about a month or so ago.
Has your dentist turned high tech on you yet? Or are they still using old film X-rays?
I think they're using film. Although I take that back, they got a new. I noticed they got a new smaller unit in there. So this last time, and I don't know. Why don't you tell me what are you leading into there, Chuck?
My dentist has gone digital. Digital photography has permeated the medical industry, and I thought this was pretty far out.
Mm-hmm.
It's still the same kind of X-ray machine. I sat down there, and they said, "Oh, Chuck, by the way, you know, it's once a year. Every other appointment, you get your, you know, the bite wings where they put the little cardboard thing in your mouth, or they used to put that terribly painful cardboard thing in your mouth."
Mm-hmm.
And then they line up the big X-ray gun and they shoot it at the side of your head. Well, now they put in what looks more like one of those security badges that you get on a leather jacket or something, only a little smaller. Mm. It's black.
Oh, okay.
It's got a little mouse tail wire coming out of it, and that hooks into a computer. So when they take the picture, the same X-ray gun shoots the X-ray, but this sensor picks it up. And in about 5 seconds, it's there on the computer screen. They've got the TV up in the corner and the computer monitor behind. And
sweet.
Boom, there's your teeth. And they go, okay, next one. And they took four of those. And then they said, every 3 years, it's time for the full face thing. I'm like, it can't be 3 years already, man. These three-year increments are going by way too fast.
No kidding.
So they did the full face thing, where you stand up and you bite on the little peg, and then this scanner moves from the left side over to the right side. We get back to the dentist chair. Boom, there's the full face shot. You can see the sinus cavities, and you can see the jawbone, and you can see the crown I had put on the front, and everything is right there. And it's kind of weird because it starts on the left side and goes to the right. So mm-hmm. it's almost like they flattened your head, but there's a neck bone on each end of the picture. It's really weird. If you go to Flickr.com, FLICKR.com, and you search for X-ray, you will see my pictures up there, or Technorati, or whatever, if you do this in a reasonable amount of time. Yeah, if you're a little squeamish about X-rays, you know, there's a geek smiling at you. That's my headshot. You will see every flaw that nature gave me and a few that were patched up by my good dentist.
Is it one of those pictures where it looks like Homer Simpson with a tiny brain?
There's no brain in these pictures, which answers a lot of things, doesn't it?
Somehow I believe that.
Alrighty, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk to an in-studio guest, Frank Frank.
He's Frank with us.
Quite.
Ready to get your geek on? Easy, check out Technorama.
We're back, and we have an in-studio guest, Frank Frank. How are you doing, Frank?
I'm doing fine.
Honestly, that is your name, right?
I'm afraid it is.
Okay.
frankly.
It used to have an email or something that was like Frank squared or...
Frank times two.
Frank times two. I remember something.
That's pretty
like
good.
That.
Don't hold back. Be frank with us.
I'll do my best.
I'm sure he's heard them all. Right, Mr. Step? I'm sure with a last name like Step, you've heard your share of bad puns, too.
Oh, yeah. I'll send you the list later.
Frank is here to tell us about his homemade cooling system of sorts. Mm-hmm. That's all I know at this point. I got it secondhand. When we were talking with Steve about GSMs the other day, or if you are a listener in series, you probably just heard it a few moments ago. Steve told us that Frank was doing some training at work where we both work and had some interesting cooling system to tell us about. Give us the 411 on how that goes.
All right. The basic problem is that I have several computers in one room.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah.
As he looks around at about eight.
Yeah, I know I'm not unusual.
How odd is that?
So the kind of work we do, we sometimes stress them. They get hot, and the temperature in the room would climb. Sometimes we'd be up over 100 degrees in the room, and the systems are overclocked at times, so they're running 135, 140 degrees, typically. So we tried some water cooling with the systems that'll cool just inside the box and recirculate water. And what we were doing is just drawing the hot air out of the box and throwing it in the room, making the room hotter.
Right.
And thus, the systems got hotter eventually.
So you needed to get the heat out of the room.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we decided to do is I've got a two-story home with the garage always being a lot cooler than the upstairs where my office is.
Mm-hmm.
So we plumbed a 55-gallon drum downstairs, filled it up with water. I run some pipes upstairs to a computer cabinet, filled the cabinet up with our computers that got hot, put a radiator at the bottom, and ran our water through the radiator, and then through a set of valves up both sides of this cabinet, one for bringing water in and one for returning the water back out.
I'm trying to picture this. Is this like a traditional computer cabinet?
Yeah.
Okay. And the radiator, was it off like a 72 Chevy, or was it something a little more commercial than that?
Yeah, it was something like that, actually.
I'm just making a visual for the listener.
Little car. Hey, it was a
that would be here in the, that Chuck, that's here in the South, man.
As a matter of fact, it is. So we put a fan underneath this radiator to blow air through the radiator, which was cool, had cool water in it, and through the through the cabinet, and then a hole in the top of the cabinet so that we flow air all the way through the cabinet. And then we pumped water in through these valves that run up and down the side of the cabinet, actually into the computer, around the CPU processor, around the video card, then back down the stairs through a radiator that had a fan mounted on it and into the 55-gallon drum. And then we have the drum set up so that you have a toilet valve at the top of it.
With the float and the arm and the whole thing. Okay.
Exactly. So that as the water evaporates, it'll drop down and fill itself back up again as it needs to.
It's cool.
If the water gets too hot, I've got a valve that I can turn the pump so it pumps the water out of the tank, out of the 55-gallon drum, into the sewer line, and just refills with fresh, cold water. And by doing this, we dropped our temperature in our computers from 135, 140 to under 100 degrees.
Wow.
That's impressive. That's ingenuity.
Now, and it was a lot cheaper than the $10,000 air conditioner they wanted to install.
Oh, I was going
to
say, it's basically the same premise as central air in your house. You know, you're removing the heat by evaporation outdoors, and then, you know, the cool in the case of commercial, it's the non-CFC coolant is being piped through there, hits the evaporator coil, and gets blown all over the house. Well, you're basically doing the same thing on a shoestring budget, basically.
Yeah, there's about a 12-degree difference in water from what comes up the stairs to what goes down.
So, you know, it's actually working.
And we're pumping about 600 gallon an hour through it. And you can. Yep. We've got thermometers set in all the computers so we can see what their current temperature is on the CPU, just as you would with any cooling system.
So we kind of it's like our server room at work. I mean, they've got a $10,000-$12,000 air unit in there, and before we got this new unit, the air went out, and they had all the doors open trying to keep it the temperature down, and I mean, it was sweltering in there. And you know, it was probably still within normal operating. You know, I mean, the machines are still okay, but oh man, it got hot. You could not sit in there and do anything.
Before we did this, we were taking covers off the computers and putting house fans up against them to blow enough air through them to just keep them cool enough to run. And about once a month, we were putting a processor and motherboard in.
Wow.
You know, and I haven't had to replace it. It's been in there for about 2 years. I haven't replaced a motherboard or processor since.
Now, these systems are actually your business. Wow. That's pretty neat. Go ahead, Frank. Craig.
What's my name again? Now, I was going to say, my little office in here, I have no windows. And especially when we do the show at night, Chuck, I've got, you know, I may have another machine on. Usually I try to stay with my Mac Mini, which is, you know, stays pretty cool, in my laptop. And, you know, the fans don't come on. There's not really not enough heat until you're really using it really heavy. And but if I've got a couple of lamps on and maybe another computer, it will get hot in here, and I have to actually open the door or try and, you know, do something. I can't, you know, I wish I could do, I should just do water cooled in here.
Keep your clothes on. We don't need that visual.
Yeah, especially with the webcam.
I'll tell you the other thing that benefits here, especially in what you guys are doing, is that the noise level in the room drops significantly.
Mm-hmm.
By putting all those computers in a cabinet, you don't hear them as bad, and we're still getting some good cooling by running the air through the cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have to run as many fans in each computer.
What about the fan on the fan that's blowing across the radiator?
It's just a regular house fan, and we run it on a medium range, so it's not real loud.
Okay.
And because it's mounted inside the cabinet, you don't even hear it. Very, very low noise compared to what we had with 10 or 12 computers and a bunch of fans in each computer.
Sure.
Well, what about power supply fans? Yeah, the power supply fans as well.
Now, I leave the fans on the power supply, mm-hmm. and we usually have one or two fans on each computer just to help circulate the air through the cases. Mm-hmm. But all the cases have their doors open, the sides off of them. Mm-hmm. We've got them mounted sideways so that they blow air through the systems. But we leave the power supplies with some fans on them to help keep, because they're enclosed.
Right.
That's pretty neat.
That is pretty neat.
Well, thank you very much, Frank.
Most welcome.
Appreciate
it. Yeah, Frank, thanks.
This is your inner geek speaking. Listen to Chuck Chat.
All right, hey, we had a good time talking to Frank, and maybe he'll be back from time to time.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Hey, we got to make this quick. We're getting a little long in the show, and we got a couple more things to wrap up. Really wanted to do a What the Chuck segment, and Craig also has a rant, so we're going to be a little off the cuff tonight on this stuff.
And I'm angry.
What the Chuck?
What's up with that?
All right, this week I heard that Nigeria will make it illegal and fine up to $3,500 for spammers in their country. Hello, world. The internet is ubiquitous. Odds are those email about the deposed dictator's fortune are not coming from Nigeria. And even if they are, guess what? They're going to move. I could say that a fortune is waiting in Iraq from Saddam's reign. But if Iraq makes it illegal to spam, they can't get me. I'm in the U.S. If the U.S. makes it illegal to spam, I set up a shop in Taiwan. Come on, people. How effective do you think this Nigerian thing is going to be? How naive do you think we are? Yes, it's a step in the right direction, but unless you have a global agreement to do something like this, it isn't going to work. And that's my What the Chuck. Before we go on to Craig's rant, we want to check in with Mark in the chat room. Mark, how you doing?
I'm just fine here, Chuck.
Who do we have in the chat room at the moment?
We've got Weber from Dallas. Actually, he's in a suburb of Dallas called Farmers Branch.
And he's made a guess at our trivia question, right? What were the first cookie cutters made from?
Weber said wood and copper.
No, it's not wood and copper.
Too bad.
Keep trying. We're going to need a soundbite of that one, Mark.
Too bad.
Elmer's glue and glitter.
No, that's what my kids make them out of.
Oh.
All right. We're going to check back with you in just a little bit towards the end of the show, which it almost is the end of the show, but we'll come back to you in just a little bit. Mark, thanks for hiding out in the chat room for us.
You bet, Chuck.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
That's your cue, Craig.
Yep, it is. All right. Here's my rant for today, and it has to do with patents. And this is directly from Slashdot, so here you go. Let me read this to you. Motslick writes, a story on National Geographic News cites a study claiming that 20% of all human genes have been patented in the United States, primarily by private firms and universities. While universities hold 28% of all gene-related patents, 63% belong to private firms. With a whopping 2,000 patented genes, approximately 67% or 50% total, belonging to a single firm. From the article, you can find dozens of ways to heat a room besides the Franklin stove, but there's only one gene to make human growth hormone. If one institution owns all the rights, it may work well to introduce new product, but it may also block others, including research. And this is kind of where I'm going. I'm like, who in the crap can patent something that they just find? It's the human gene. We all have it. It's
oh, you're talking about those kind of genes. I thought you were talking about Levi's and Wranglers and Sears Tough Skins.
Those can be patented.
Okay.
But I'm talking about, maybe I'm just misunderstanding something, but how, just because they find, they figure out how to read the human genome, they can, oh, we can just patent it. Things they find and discover.
I would have a fun time working at the U.S. Patent and Trade Office. I'd throw things out. I'd say, that's stupid. Throw it out.
Yeah, and then they'll stick the high-dollar lawyers on you.
They won't find me.
But anyway, you see where I'm coming from? That's where I'm a little ticked off.
Yes, patents, I think it's stupid crazy as well.
That's about as, I mean, it's like, I don't know, some of these stupid patents, like Microsoft patenting the double click and, you know, Amazon doing the one-click shopping. This is about as silly as that.
It's to keep the high-priced lawyers in business. That's all it is.
Apparently.
Because you know somebody's going to want to rebut the thing. All right. We're going to have another quick announcement. We've got show number 50 coming up on Wednesday, and we want you to know about it.
Yeah.
Just a reminder that Technorama is coming up on show number 50. We've got hundreds of dollars worth of cool stuff, and you'll want to make sure you don't miss out on your chance to win. To enter, head over to ChuckChat.com and sign up for the announcements mailing list to qualify for the prize drawings we'll be doing on show number 50. The mailing lists are on the left side of the main page at www.chuckchat.com. Don't delay, sign up today. All right, one quick check back into the chat room. Mark, how are you?
I'm great, Chuck.
Do we have any new answers to the cookie cutter question?
Well, since we don't have any other users in here, no.
This is an exceptionally slow Sunday night.
It is. Yeah. Watch them all come after we get off air.
Yeah, they like to show up for the post show. I noticed that. I'm going to record a post podcast podcast.
The post show party.
Maybe that's the interesting part of this show. I don't.
Yeah. I'm installing a keg in here.
Ooh.
I'm installing a keg in the chat room.
All right, then we will give you the answer to today's trivia question.
Yes, please.
What were the first cookie cutters made of? Tin and iron. And, of course, the tin contained lead, so they had to do it. It was kind of a tin-plated iron thing. So it wasn't real good. Yeah, they did find that out. And so they
These
changed
cookies
that
are
to
great.
Like a... They taste like lead. Maybe they're Ellie Mae's cookies. Those were made of lead.
Yeah, all right. Right.
Thank you for holding things down for us in the chat room tonight, Mark.
No problem.
And
It wasn't hard.
Start you out easy, right?
That's right.
And you're worth every penny we pay you.
That's right.
And this is his evaluation period, by the way.
We'll talk to you again next time, Mark. Thanks.
Take care.
Craig, you want to take us out?
Yeah. Be sure to call our listener line like so many others before you have. 206-222-CHAT. That's 2428. You can email Chuck at chuck@chuckchat.com. You can email me. That's Craig, K-R-E-G, at chuckchat.com. And don't forget to visit our website. We got links to the forums, our Cafe Press site, and you can buy cool t-shirts there, the webcam, and mailing lists, and sign up for the Show 50, which is coming up Wednesday. And here's several.
I should make a note that our forums link is now changed. We were privately hosting our forums, but we've made a compiled forums room.
Mm.
We have joined up with some other friends in tech, notably called friendsintech.com, and if you click on our forums link, you will get their bigger audience, similar, diverse listenership, but all tech-based. People from In the Trenches, listeners over at Kevin Devin's In the Trenches, which George Starcher, who did that Geek Survival Kit thing, he's from there. Mm-hmm. Victor Cahiao, who's done some sweepers and shown me how to use my mixer and a whole bunch of other stuff. Victor was a guest host on the show not too long ago.
You're going to have to hook him up with a nice Christmas present.
We're going to buy him a beer when we go out to the expo. We will be meeting a lot of these people at the expo. Douglas E. Welch, who I mentioned earlier in the show,
and Steve Holden. So lots of good things happening over there, so we should get a lot better response on the forums.
Mm-hmm.
Parting words of wisdom, sir?
Yes. The problem with troubleshooting is that troubleshooting can shoot back.
Ouch. It often does, doesn't it?
Yeah. It stings. It stings.
We'd like to thank you for listening. If you're a subscribed, longtime listener, thank you for returning to the show. And don't forget, lots of different ways to get in touch with us. Please do. We covered a lot of things in this show and have a lot more to do and hope to hear from you in the near future. Binary High Five.
101.
Shutdown sequence in progress. Primary power offline in 1 minute.